another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Liv Phillips. Liv, it's good to finally have you on. We have we're friends from way back, and yet we barely know each other. It's kind of a funny story. I'll let you tell that part of the story, but very, very excited to have you on. I am related to your husband, and it's a fascinating story how he was able to escape, and you're a big part of this. So yeah. Maybe we'll just start. Let everybody get to know you, if you could just tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
I'm Liv, and I am a stay-at-home mom to two kids. And the whole reason why I'm here, I accidentally married somebody who was a part of a cult.
I was kind of estranged from your husband. He moved off to a different part of the earth, in Tennessee, which is another part of the story that gets a little bit crazy. But I didn't know him that much. I had seen him some growing up, but at the same time, my family had moved off to another part of the country. And what brought us back together, ironically, my family moved back here to Jeffersonville, which is Mecca for the cult.
Yeah.
And you both did as well. And come to find out, we're living, what was it? It was like maybe
5 minutes
from each other, and didn't know it for the longest time, right?
We lived there for 2 years. I had no idea.
Yeah, so I was mentioning right before we got on here, I had another couple that they were telling their story, and the wife was in the cult for a long time, I think raised from birth, and her husband, he was not a part of it, and wasn't really, he was kind of blindsided. He wasn't really aware that he was getting together with somebody who was in the cult until that moment hit him, and he's like, wait a minute, there's something odd about these people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have another person on who can talk through what that's like, because most of my audience, they're not really, you know, most of them weren't raised in the Branham cult, ironically. This is the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. Mm-hmm. But most of the people have seen what has developed from Branhamism. And so they don't really have a grasp of what it would be like. But you have the idea of exactly what it's like to suddenly come to terms with the fact that that guy that I married, there's something unusual about his religion. Maybe yeah. If you could talk through that a bit.
Our relationship moved very quickly. And we were together and then married after 6 months. So we didn't get a whole lot of introductory time. From my understanding of the religion at first, I thought Branham was just this like weird pastor. And it wasn't until I was told by some family members that he was actually considered to be a prophet. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because I was raised Southern Baptist and non-denominational. And this was like not something you believe in. It was very taboo from where I would be coming from. And so it was a little strange to have to do the research and be like, this guy really thought he was a prophet. Like he really did. He really thought that he did something with creating this. But I think Sam and his mom had been talking about like listening to tapes. And I remember thinking like, how strange is that they just listen to tapes all the time. And, you know, Sam just said, oh, this is how we believe, whatever. And I was unable to just accept that this was normal, in my opinion. So I did the heavy lifting and the research on my own. He didn't even know that I was going to be looking it up after this had happened. But it was about 6 months before I was like, this is bigger than what I thought it was.
And to the audience who doesn't really grasp that, the tapes thing, picture your family getting up on Sunday morning, and while the rest of the world is putting on their Sunday go to meet and clothes, and they drive down to the Baptist church, the Methodist church, they go sit and hear a minister preaching, families like mine, families like your husband's, we would put our clothes on and we would go sit on the couch in our living room and listen to a recording of this dead guy. So in hindsight, this was a little bit crazy, but at the time, you know, I was born and raised like this. This was nothing unusual. We did sometimes go to churches. We did sometimes hear ministers. But there was a large part of my life where I would wake up on Sunday and I would be like, Dad, why am I going to put on my Sunday best to go sit on our couch, right? Yeah. And I think there were a lot of families that finally just got away with sitting around in PJs, but that's what we would do. We would go listen to recordings of a dead guy. And I'll never forget the one time, I only did it once, one time I invited somebody over who... they were excited about Jesus. They were, in fact, they were probably part of another movement. But I invited them to my house, and they come in, and they're expecting us. I said, let's have church. And to him, have church meant let's go to church, or
right.
let's have church, let's all get together and pray. And he watches us progress from our, you know, I got up out of the bedroom playing toys, what Nintendo or whatever it was, mm-hmm. walked out with him into the living room. We all sat down, and he's listening to this guy screaming like Hitler on the recording. And I'll never forget the look on his face. Just that look was enough that I never invited him back.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. I think the biggest issue that kind of stuck out for me when I started like going down this Branham rabbit hole was I kind of realized that I wasn't going to be accepted. There was going to be no part of our union that would be accepted, which I think kind of fueled my rabbit hole a little bit more because I wanted to understand why. So I think it was like the wrong kind of fuel that they wanted, I'm sure. But not only because of my ethnicity, obviously that's a major elephant, but because it is his second marriage, we had to kind of learn how to navigate that because that's like not a thing in the message.
Yeah, and there's so much to unpack there. I remember families that were like that. The couple would get together, and either the male or the female, whichever one was the lifelong cult member, they're the ones who are saved. And the other ones are just kind of scorned. They're frowned upon. It's like you've got this scarlet letter, and you don't know why you've got it.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember that thinking how odd it would be to be that person who everybody's just kind of looking at different. What was that like for you? When you first began to realize that they're thinking of me differently, what was your reaction? Were you wanting to try to fix it? Were you wanting to ask them why? What was going through your head?
I'm not generally a fix-it person, so I knew they wouldn't tell me why either. I knew that there were things that they would just say, well, this is just how we believe. But I was unwilling to accept that. So I knew I would have to get the information on my own. But I did start noticing differences. His grandparents called me that girl or his girlfriend, and we had been married for like 2 years. His grandparents blatantly told me, like, you know, his ex is his wife. She'll always be our granddaughter. So it was pretty like in your face. You weren't going to escape it, but they wouldn't tell you why. It was just, this is just it. And it wasn't until I went down the rabbit hole that I was like, oh, he's not supposed to be with me. That's why. And so it was a little bit startling of a realization, but it kind of, honestly, I kind of like being different. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with it. And if this guy's worth his salt, then he won't care anyway.
Yeah, and you had it doubly rough. So in the group that we came from, if you were married to somebody, you were married for life. And there was nothing you could do to change this. Even if you got divorced, they would forever hold on to the first woman. And whoever was your new wife, they would never, ever create an emotional connection. I've seen that time and time again. So you had that going for you. But then there's this weird thing that happens as well with the ethnicity.
Yeah.
I do know that there are some people, it's a vast array of different beliefs in the message. But I know of some sects within the message where if you're Hispanic, you can marry a white person, and they kind of allow it, especially out west, but never a black person. A black person and a white person, it is totally forbidden. But then there are other groups that even the Hispanics can't marry the white people. There's this strong division with the races. And I've actually dug in to try to figure out why that was. But what was that like for you? Did you feel that race was any part of the issue that they were having with you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, before we started recording, I told you about the racist toy that they got him. It 100% was a part of the issue. Anytime we're invited to eat, you'll never guess where we eat, a Mexican restaurant. And they complain about the food the entire time. And then, you know, I have to apologize to servers in Spanish. But I feel like the most it's been in my face is acting like they don't know how to say my name. Acting like they forget my name. We've been together like 7 years and his grandmother still doesn't know how to pronounce my name. And it's not a hard name. My name is Olivia. Like, that's not a difficult name to say. So it's that, but it's also the toy. That was probably the most in your face microaggression that I have experienced from them in quite some time.
So for the audience who doesn't know, explain the toy a bit.
So the toy is a tiny like truck, and it is a taco truck, and it's bright red and a green, and you can press a button and it'll play mariachi music. And they got it for my son. And he does like cars, but it was just kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, this feels a little wrong. But it got worse when I got up to take our daughter to the bathroom and they were like, she is Mexican, right? And I was like, oh, okay. You've known me for 7 years, but okay.
Wow. That's something else. Yeah. Race is, it's a real problem because I was raised in this for 37 years. I was raised to be a racist and I did not know that I was. Ironically, I never knew that I was supposed to be that way with Hispanic and white people. Yeah. Because I live part of my life in Arizona, and I saw a lot of that. So I didn't know I was supposed to. But in hindsight, whenever I moved back to Jeffersonville, I think there was a lot of that going on as well. But I was definitely raised to believe that if you were white, you can't marry a black. And if you did so, you were polluting the races. That was one of our belief sets. And I didn't know where it came from. And like you, I wanted to know how this works. So I'm digging in, I'm doing my own research. And whenever you learn that the Imperial Wizard of the Klan was behind planting this church that was my grandfather's church, I can't tell you the shock that I had and the disgust, because at that moment I started going back through every single thing that I've ever said to a person that was not white, whether it was Hispanic or I started looking at everything and realized that there were things that I said that just probably were racist, and I started trying to correct it. Now, I'm going to speak in defense of the family a bit. When you're in that mentality and you're raised in it, you don't even realize when you do it. And that was happening to me. I started checking myself, and I started noticing that whenever I was talking to people of a different race, I was saying things that they would probably see as offensive, like the taco truck. I will probably guarantee I would have not even known how offensive that would have been if I was in this thing. Now that I'm out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I think they thought they were being sweet, like you said, just kind of one of those things. And they don't realize, like, it's considered racist to do something like that. It's not good.
No, it's not. And so that's just one aspect. There, whenever you're in this mindset, your entire worldview has changed. Everything from the way that you think about people, what we've talked about race, the way that you think about the sexes, the way that you think about sex, the way that you think about everything has been changed. And again, I'm just fascinated to have somebody who has married somebody who came from this mentality, because they can talk through all of these experiences. Let's talk a little bit about misogyny. Whenever we were raised in a cult, like you said, by a man who claimed that he was a prophet, and his big claim to fame, his so-called seven prophecies that made him famous, one of those famous prophecies was that women would cause the destruction of the United States and finally the end of the world. Whenever you stop and think about just how misogynist that is, it's kind of offensive. And the way that he says it is offensive. He says, women, because we allowed them to vote, they would elect the wrong man, and in doing so would cause the whole world to be destroyed. That's how I was raised for 37 years. And I can tell you as a male that it skewed my way of thinking of females, because these are the people who are causing the whole world to be destroyed, right? So coming in from your perspective, raised in a normal church, you know, raised up to believe the gospel as it's being taught, when you first encountered the way that they thought about women, what did you experience?
Honestly, it came a lot from other women, which would be interesting. My father-in-law has, you know, made some questionable comments about the kind of wife that I am, but a lot of it came from other women who are a part of the message, because to them, I am not the cute little housewife who surrenders and submits and just is quiet and just, because that's what they're taught to do, right? They're taught to make the homemade bread and shut up. And so a lot of it, I feel like, has came from other women about who I am as a wife, because I was raised differently than they were.
Let's unpack that a bit. So when you start to experience this and you start to notice that the women are thinking of me a little bit differently, what would you say was their description of what a holy message woman would be?
A holy message woman wears skirts. A holy message woman doesn't wear anything that could show cleavage or midriff. A holy message woman exalts her husband to no end, pretty much. Like, he's the best thing since sliced bread. And they follow emphatically whatever it is their husband says.
For somebody who hasn't been raised in it, I'd say you nailed that pretty well. And it changes the way the dynamics of the family. It changes the way that the families operate. Whenever we left the message, I had to relearn what it meant to be a husband. And there were things that, I don't know if you experienced this as well, but there were tasks and chores that was the woman's work. The men don't do this kind of thing. And you can't really say that's limited to the message. I have seen other fundamentalist groups that it's kind of the same way. But I started thinking about just how wrong that was, especially, my wife works right now. So especially now that she's working, I am trying my darndest to do half of the cooking, half of the cleaning. I even, you'll laugh at this and I'll let the world laugh as well. I didn't know how to make laundry and how to put the stuff in and how to move it to the dryer. I had to learn all of this, like, you know, 5 years ago. And I grew up in a world where men just didn't do that kind of thing. The men were doing the men's work and the females were doing the females' work, right? And I'm picturing, if you're around women, it's kind of, what's a good example? It's kind of like the Amish. In the Amish communities, when you go to be with the Amish, the men go sit here, the women go sit here, and the women have women conversations. When the message, it's like one step away from that, because the men and the women can eat together. But then after the meal is done, there are things that women do, things that men do. What was that like for you?
It was, I think, difficult to see, especially after because I'm trying to make sure I say this correctly. My father-in-law is not home all of the time because of his job. I can say that. And so by the time I had actually experienced this and seen this in action, it had been quite a while, because my husband is very helpful with things. But just seeing how different even a meal is interacted with, like something that is so simple. I don't ever remember him asking, "Do you need help?" And I remember thinking that, like, my dad always asks, like, "Does my mom need help?" She may say no. She'll probably say no, but he never asked. Like, that's kind of weird. And I remember that sticking out to me. But then I'm like, when I got deeper into this, I was like, he never asked because he's not supposed to. Like, he is the man, so he is to be served. And she is the woman. She is to do the serving. They may have their meal together, but everything else is on her, because he's going to go pop a squat on the couch afterwards. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's just like this weird, like, it's a weird dynamic to try and like put into words, I guess.
I'm thinking back through some of the families that I knew, and I don't know that the men ever asked the women, "Can I help you with the dishes afterwards?" My mother and father were sick a lot growing up. I ended up having to do some of the chores, and so I really didn't have a problem doing it. But looking back, it was a strange dynamic, I'll just say it like that, the way that they interacted. And as I mentioned, the weirdness gets weirder the deeper you get, because as they tell you, "Hey, did you know we serve a prophet? We believe this prophet. And everything this man says is the written, the spoken word of God." That's how they usually phrase it. I'm trying to picture myself as a normal Christian. I wish I had a normal Christian life growing up. But if I were a normal Christian and I had the Bible and I heard the gospel and I knew the gospel and I was raised with the gospel, suddenly finding out that there was a man who had the spoken word of God, and I was supposed to basically take it to be the equal or sometimes superior to the Bible. If somebody had have told me this, I'm trying to imagine what would have been running through my head. What was running through your head?
This is blasphemy. 100% still to this day. This is blasphemy. This is exactly what the Bible my entire life has warned me about. This is exactly what my parents have explicitly warned me about as far as false prophets and things. I didn't even have to look into it to know that this was a bunch of baloney. I just needed the solidification that this was a bunch of baloney, because when you grow up normal with a normal mom and a normal dad who teach you normal things, and then you're faced with this, it honestly seems unbelievable. Like, I felt like I was living in an alternate universe, just to be completely transparent.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Now, whenever you got married and suddenly found out, hey, this is an unusual group, what was the experience? Did they take you to a church, or was it only these tape recordings?
No, I've never actually listened to a tape recording. I heard them talking about, and that's when I was like, what is this? I saw that the way that they dressed, and this may seem unusual, but I went ahead and let my husband know that I would not be stepping foot in a church. Now, my husband had no clue that he had grown up in a cult, but he didn't want to go back because he was like, this gives me anxiety and like, I hate it here pretty much. And so we were just kind of the agreement that like nobody's stepping foot in a church. But that is what prompted me, because I'm like, why are they listening to recordings?
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So you mentioned anxiety about church, and I want to talk through that because that is more significant than I think a lot of people realize. And especially in cases like you found yourself in, it's really important to understand how that works. So growing up in this world that we did, we had the spoken word. This was a man who told us what we were supposed to believe, right down to what we were supposed to enjoy and what sports we couldn't partake in. I remember the shock in somebody's face the first when they learned I'd never bowled. I'd never went bowling because bowling was of the devil, right?
Yeah.
So you had this person from the 40s and 50s who's basically telling you everything that you have to know in life. Well, it gets a little bit chaotic because during that era, you had the Cold War fears, you had the atomic scares, you had the Red Scares, you had all of the things that was happening in the 60s, ironically, many of which are kind of repeating themselves today. But in the 60s, the fear was the dominating factor. It was a religion of fear, and it was a religion that was a doomsday religion. The world is going to end at any minute, and we need to be prepared because the women are going to destroy us. That's the mentality I had, right? So you live with this constant fear, and you don't even know how anxious you are while you're in it. Really, it wasn't until after I left, I went through a series of just trying to cleanse my head from all of this nonsense. And part of what I had to cleanse was just the anxiety. There was a period of time I actually went on some medication for it. Well, to two people who leave, like my wife left with me, she would have had many of the same anxieties at, you know, different levels. So we both kind of experienced the progression from anxiety to normalcy together. But if you're a couple who one part of the family was never in it, one person was, now you've got the collision of the religion, you've got the collision of the misogyny, the racism, all of these other things, but you also have the collision of mental health, which is something that's not talked about very much in the cult world.
Never.
What was that like for you?
It was really hard to see, I think. I think everybody struggles with some level of anxiety about something. You know, it could be a test, it could be anything. I did not expect to have that level of anxiety every time my husband walked into a church. And it was any church. It could have been a Baptist church. It could have been a Methodist church. It could have been a Church of Christ church, but it wasn't a message church. So he knew he wasn't supposed to be there, even though he had left the church and he didn't want to believe it anymore. And he, you know, got tattoos and did all the things that he did when he left. He knew he was not supposed to be doing it because that mentality is so ingrained in you that you know when you're not supposed to be somewhere. And the anxiety is heightened because you feel like, oh, they're going to know I was here. You know, this is not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be far away from this.
Yeah, absolutely. And mental health, to be fair, mental health issues can be in any religion. It's more, in some cases, it's a chemical thing that some people have. But you combine the hereditary and sometimes adult onset mental health issues with the anxiety that the cult produces, and then it becomes amplified. So what we had was a little bit amplified. But you mentioned something else that I want to talk through. There are people who, even long after leaving, because you're indoctrinated with such fear, you'll never be comfortable outside of what you grew up in. In other words, I have friends who they told me for decades they could never set foot into another church because this church had just scarred them so badly. And it sounds like you experienced some of the same. What was that like, trying to navigate that type of fear?
we church hopped a lot because, you know, you never know when the anxiety is going to just suddenly hit you. So for, I would say probably the first year that I believed the message was a cult and my husband did not yet know, we church hopped or just didn't go because he would get so anxious and it was just hard to willingly put him in that situation as a spouse.
Yeah, it's tough. I have a friend who he's now in a healthy church. In fact, he plays music every Sunday, but he told me, John, it wasn't until I started to dig into some of the research that I put out. He said I was never able to be comfortable in a church. And he said, quite honestly, I thought I was an atheist, which is so odd to me because I've talked to a lot of people who are what you would call deconstructing. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they've become an atheist, but really what they've done is they've broken down this false god that has been produced by these groups. And as they're breaking that down, they realize, well, wait a minute, that false god really doesn't match the God of the Bible, so the Bible must be wrong. And that's where it gets really sad, because the way that they have presented God in these religions, if you just simply open up the Bible and read, it doesn't match, and you start to think that, well, that's a huge discrepancy. This Bible is wrong, therefore I must be an atheist. And this friend of mine, he went through that. He said, I thought I was an atheist, but I began to realize that, no, they had lied to me about what God was. And so he had to basically start from scratch, like I did, relearn what does it mean to talk about God? What does it mean to pray to God? And so learning that from square one is very difficult. How would you describe the God that he believed then versus the God that you believe now?
The God that he believed was God was terrifying, was a punishing, unrelenting, like just man in the sky, for lack of a better term, that just like, you're a sinner. There was really not much room for compassion. And I realized that very quickly.
I think that's a good way to put it. There was no compassion with the God, but even with the religion. I remember people who were outside of the religion who really desperately needed help. Sometimes it would be food, sometimes it would be money, and you never really found a drive or a desire by people in the cult to help those in the city around them. I'll never forget whenever these tornadoes came through here and it just devastated parts of the surrounding cities. I remember the cult putting out an announcement, not a single believer was harmed, I think was how they put it, if I remember the statement correctly. I was in a Christian church at that time, and we were actually helping people who had been harmed, and they were Christians who had been harmed, but the way that they worded it was such that those people who are other Christians, they're not believers, we're the believers, and we were unscathed by this thing, right? And it's just so wrong when you think about it. I'm glad I'm no longer like that, but
yeah.
Whenever you were coming into this and you started to notice the best way to say it is the elitism, because that's what we had when we talked about it. We were the elite. We thought of ourselves as the elite, and those other Christians whose homes were destroyed, they're not the good ones. They're not the elite ones. Yeah. What was the elitist mentality like to you?
Weird. Like, so totally just bizarre, because when you grow up Southern Baptist, non-denominational, whatever you want to call it today, everybody's on the same playing field. Everybody is at the same place that you are. And so when it came to this, like, well, we are going to heaven because this is how we believe, and you know, this is the only way. There's only one way to do things. You don't know any better. It was just, it's very condescending to watch. And then it's almost like, who gave you the entitlement that you're better than everybody else? Because you could be somebody's stumbling block just like I could. And so it was almost like, I guess the best way to explain it is secondhand embarrassment. Honestly, I was almost embarrassed for them.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it would be like. You would be embarrassed for them because they really don't know what they're doing. I when I was in it, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know that I was rude to people, but and that's the irony of this. I've taken all these personality tests and I'm off the charts in altruism. I want to help people. In fact, I had a counselor, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast. I had a counselor sit down with me and I'd taken the personality test for one of my employers, and they said, John, you have to be careful because you will actually kill yourself to help another person. And you have to know those boundaries. You have to know those limits. And I'll never forget thinking at that moment, because we were out of the cult probably, gosh, it's probably 5 years at that point. I'll never forget thinking that I wasn't like that when I was in the thing. I had that inside of me, right? I had that personality type, but I did not really want to help people that weren't outside of the cult because of that elitist mentality. In other words, I was indoctrinated to believe that I must be this way. And I think that's why Dr. Stephen Hassan mentions this in his book, Combating Cult Mind Control. When people leave a cult, they will sometimes shift entire categories of personality because their personality that they are basically being told that they have to have a personality, and that personality becomes embedded in their being. Once you leave, you start to explore the real you, and you start to see that that's not me. That's not the person that I was. And that ironically leads me to another question that I've been thinking through for you. Whenever this happens, when you come out of a cult, you start to change, your personality starts to change. And I had a couple tell me one time in one of our support groups, they said, John, whenever we left, we were tight, we were close, we really knew each other well. But after we left for about 2 or 3 years, the personalities changed so much, we actually didn't recognize each other. It was like we had to learn how to love each other again. Did you experience any of that?
To an extent, yes. Because he was out, but he wasn't like super sure it was a cult. I noticed, honestly, it started politically. We had differing political views, as some people do. And a lot of his political views were family driven. They were, you know, this is what I'm going to believe because my family members have believed this. And I definitely think that can be anywhere. But it fell in line with the misogyny and with the movement that they were a part of. It was very like, this is the party we align with because this aligns with the message. And that was the first thing. It was the 2020 election. And that was the first thing that I noticed, the big change where I was like, he's actually thinking through this. And it was finding out that like this whole thing is a cult. And so, you know, he had to unlearn stuff, but finding out that like, hey, I don't actually believe this. I don't have to believe this. I can change my mind.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I didn't realize. In fact, I'll bet it took me over a decade after leaving that I began to realize that the religion and the politics had merged so closely that essentially, it was a political cult disguised as a religious cult. And if you understand that the Klan was behind it, and there were other ideologies, but at that time, the Klan was the big one. They were pushing the political agenda through religion. And it didn't make sense to me because I did not really know that history. When I think of Klan, I think of just simply, this is a group of people dressed in these funny robes and they don't like black people. But that's not really what they were. They were about much more than just that. And I had to learn, what does it mean to be a racist? What does it mean to be part of the Klan? And I started to realize that almost every building block of our religion was based off of that political ideology. We hated Catholics with a passion. Catholics were the bad guys. That came from that same ideology. We did not, right down to the things that we, the way that we looked at women, they were pushing the ideology that I don't know that they would say that the women caused the end of the world, but the women were going to be part of the destruction. And the reason why the Klan did not like this was because the women were starting to, as they were in the school system, they were starting to have young females who liked the young, you know, white females like the young black females. And they were saying things like, it's going to pollute our race. It's going to cause the race not to be pure. And God likes things that are pure. That's how they would spin this. And so they were targeting the women. They were targeting the races. And literally every building block we had was there. But then those turned into doctrines. And some of those doctrines progressed. And over time, as the racist element was kind of taken away from it and people did not think they were racist, the doctrines continued. And so you're still teaching racist doctrine, not even knowing where it came from. That was really difficult for me. And I can't even imagine, you know, what you've gone through to understand this. What other areas? I want to go deeper with the politics, though, because not many people realize how merged this is. What other political areas were conflicts with you?
The big one was who we were going to vote for as president. Obviously, as a, you know, a Mexican person, there was a political party that I couldn't get behind because I believed that they stood for hate and that they were racist against people who were just like me, who were just everyday people, but they happened to be Latina. And he let me know that he was cool with voting for that. And abortion was a big one for us because I believe that everybody gets choices in life and, you know, the government shouldn't be able to dictate things. And he believed at that time that under no circumstances were you to get an abortion or any of that. I don't think he was as far as thinking that women shouldn't vote, but there were definitely things where I was like, oof, this is a little bit of an issue.
I remember walking with my wife into the elementary school behind our house. She had never voted for her, what was it, 40 years she had been in the message. She had never voted. And I did not know this, but she had always wanted to. And the sad part of this, I never wanted to. I really didn't care who won or lost. But she did. She came from a family who were very, very much into politics. My family was very much not. And so watching her vote for the first time was amazing because that's something she had always wanted to do, but the cult would not let her do it.
I don't know that my husband had ever voted before me, but from what I could gather in the family dynamic and kind of what they were raised up in as the message, you kind of just listen to whatever the patriarch said. So whatever the patriarch, so whatever his dad said, was like, that was just kind of like, oh yeah, we go with that. Like that's what we do. I don't know that he ever voted, but I do remember just being like, this is strange because you're with somebody who is very openly Latina. I talk about it all the time. I'm very proud of where I come from. And you're like, you were okay voting. Like you would be okay voting against me pretty much. And that was difficult. So to see that like change so drastically, just by me literally turning the TV on and saying, we're going to watch this debate. Like you, at the end of the day, you can think whatever it is that you want to think. If you want to continue to think this way, more power to you. We all have choices, but I want you to just watch the debate. And his whole identity for what he thought was political, I could see completely shift. There may still be things that he, you know, agrees with or aligns with in some areas, but I could just see that he was like, I've never paid attention like this. Completely eyes open, nobody, you know, perverting anything that one party said over another, just exactly the way you're supposed to see it, just completely unfiltered. Nothing behind it. And he was like, I don't think I believe half the stuff that I believed originally.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling well. So you've done a lot of research. In talking with you, I've came to, and I've known you for some time now, so I've known that you have, but for people who are in a similar situation, I know that there's others out there who suddenly they found out, oh my gosh, my family's in something weird. What is this weird thing? Maybe if you could talk a little bit about what that was like. How did you begin the research? What did you do to find out all of the facts that you uncovered?
I remember thinking, I have to know what this is. I have to know everything, the good, the bad, and the nitty gritty. Where am I going to do that? Google. Immediately Google all the time. You can find anything you want on Google. And I just typed in the message, William Branham. And I think I stumbled across a website that you helped create very like off of the rip. And that threw me for a circle because I'm like, oh my gosh, is this like a cult? Like, was I right? You know? So I was like, maybe it's just confirmational bias, right? And then I found a sermon from what turned out to be my in-law's pastor. And I watched it. I watched it completely how the congregation would. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is a cult. And so I decided to dig deeper because I did find like the KKK ties and like all of these like little tiny nuggets of things. And I remember Sam came home from work and I looked at him and I said, you were a part of a cult. And he thought that I absolutely lost my mind because I had spent, I kid you not, 8 hours down a rabbit hole. I listened to the podcast that you did. I had no idea. I don't think I've ever told you this. I had no idea that you were Sam's cousin. And I found the Cultish podcast and I'm listening to it while I'm washing dishes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I was right about everything. Like everything I thought I was right about. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I remember telling Sam, like, you have to watch this podcast. You have to watch this podcast. And he was completely like, I am not watching that. And so one day I said, hey, do you want to watch a Netflix documentary with me? And we watched the Netflix documentary about Scientology. And it was after we watched that, he was like, there were some similarities. There were some things, and I knew there would be. And I was like, oh, really? You know, like trying to play it cool. But that was really, honestly, probably my way of like, I know that I have to show this to him, but I can't just throw it in his face again.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Coming to terms with what you were in was not quite right. And I know the pastor that you're referring to, it's kind of an unusual thing to type in most racist pastor in America and oh my gosh, what do you see? And that's the same kind of shock that I had too, right? Whenever I learned that my grandfather's church was planted by the Imperial Wizard of the Klan. That was hard to accept, I'm not going to lie. But that's where this came from. And then to think that it was because of this church and the movement that began from it birthed all of these numerous different cults. That's the hard part that I'm still trying to grasp how that's even possible. Take one single thread of false doctrine, and in this case, like you mentioned, there's a lot of heretical threads, but just take one and watch it grow and develop over time, what it can turn into. And you find cults. We've got cults of polygamy. We've got starvation cults. You've got Jim Jones, People's Temple, the Jonestown Massacre. That was a leader in this group. I mean, there is just no end to the harm that it can cause whenever you take just one little phrase of the Bible and just twist it a little bit. And for me, that's really the key. Whenever I learned that what they were teaching wasn't really in the Bible, and I started reading the Bible for myself, I remember that was the biggest shock of all, I think, was to learn that what this guy's saying about what's in this Bible isn't what the Bible says. And in some case, what he says is exactly polar opposite, but yet I'm told to, I must believe the polar opposite.
Yeah.
that was really hard for me to accept. From a doctrinal standpoint, did you find any doctrines that you thought were just completely anti-biblical?
Oh, I felt honestly all of them. If I'm being honest, it's something as simple as, I was talking to my sister-in-law the other day, and she was like, did you know that like this Bible character and this Bible character were like 65 years apart? And I was like, yeah. She goes, I had no idea. And I'm like, really? Like, you didn't know? She's like, no. Branham teaches us that like these two individuals were born at the same time. Like it's the little things too, where they can twist and perverse that. So it's everything. Like I feel like this really is a religion that piggybacked off of the Bible in all of the wrong ways, but they did it so well.
Yeah, exactly. Even the doomsday theology, which is really the core of this religion, it was a doomsday cult. The doomsday theology is wrapped around the idea that we have an elite group, the bride, they call it, and you have the carnal group, the world, they call it. And those two were typed in the Bible by the biblical figures Noah and Enoch. Enoch was carried away. Noah went through the flood. That's how they type it. And that's what Branham did. And like you mentioned, the 65 years or whatever, he took it so far as to say that the Bible was wrong when it said that Enoch was on earth for 365 years. Instead, it was 500 years. 500 years until he actually walked with Noah. And he says it multiple times. He said that was what typed the bride of Christ in the world. And I believe this. I believe that I was supposed to ignore when the Bible says 365. I'm supposed to ignore this because this man from Kentucky, who's now dead, who thought he was a prophet, believed this. And I came to the point, I no longer believe what that man said.
Yeah, that's actually the exact thing we were talking about, because she had no clue. And she was, I think she's following a Bible study like chronologically. And she was like, wait a second, this isn't right. And then, you know, you get deeper and deeper and you're like, what else isn't right? What else is completely wrong? I mean, we still find stuff to this day. He'll send me a Bible verse and say, I never even knew this existed.
Exactly. And there's the Bible verses that he invented. Those are still programmed in my head. I had a list of them on the website, but he would say, did you know the Bible said? And then he would make up this verse that it's not even in there. What in the world was he doing? And he's one of the ministers who would frequently quote the last chapter of Book of Revelation, whosoever adds to or takes away from this book, his part will be taken from the Book of Life. And yet he's doing the very thing that he's condemning. So I had to come to terms with the fact that I don't believe that the man even believed what he was saying. I don't believe he was a Christian, because Christians just don't do that kind of thing. So I had to come to terms with the fact that I was in a religion, it wasn't Christian, it did not match the Bible, the God that it portrayed wasn't the God of the Bible, the people weren't really that good. They were good people, don't get me wrong. But the way that they were trained, they weren't good to other people. I think that's how I would say it. So what advice would you give to somebody who's in your exact situation? They suddenly realize that their spouse is in some weird religion, that it might be a cult. What advice would you give them?
Don't force knowledge. Don't force, you know, if they refuse to go to church, just don't force them. I think because you're indoctrinated a lot of times as a child, when you come out of this as an adult, whether it's 18 or in my husband's case, 32, it is such a learning experience just to navigate everyday life that you have to just be patient. You can't force the knowledge. They have to be ready and willing to look into it and seek out the truth on their own. No amount of talking you can do can make them realize how crazy this really is.
Well, that's very good advice. And you have a TikTok channel where you're telling people about this thing that you finally discovered that your husband is in. Tell us where they can go to find the TikTok.
You can find it at that anti-message girl. And in the coming days, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into some of the doctrine and things of that nature and kind of how all this came to be with my experience.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about William Branham, you can read Preacher Behind the White Hoods, a critical examination of William Branham and his message, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.